WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's been said that the value and meaning of a civilization can be determined from the record it leaves in the form of architecture, and that the true measure of society's compassion lies in how well it treats its frail older people. Those two observations have special meaning for Victor Rainier because he's the former dean of the Architecture School at the University of Southern California and now directs the university's Gerontology Center. On Friday, at the annual convention of the American Institute of Architects in Philadelphia, he will give a presentation about his travels through Northern Europe, studying innovative approaches that encourage independent living for the elderly, models he thinks Americans can learn from in helping to create alternatives to nursing homes. One of his objections to most American nursing homes is that they are based on a medical model and look more like hospitals than homes. I asked him for his critique.
To start with, from the street, it's hard to tell what the building is. Sometimes it looks a little like a public school. Sometimes it looks like a building that has absolutely no character associated with it. But it doesn't appear to be housing. Once you enter and start to look around, often you're confronted with someone behind a glass window. And as you walk down the corridors, they're almost always double-loaded. There are nursing stations that are located in strategic areas. And often they're older people that are crowded around those nurses' stations because of the paucity of activities in the setting. Often that's the place to go. You find yourself in a room which is more often than not double occupied with a small curtain that separates you from the person next door. The floors are almost always some type of hard surface material. It's loud. It's not an environment that you think of as a housing setting. It's not a place where you feel good and comfortable.
I guess the space that's yours is your bed and your night table.
That's about right. And sometimes if you're lucky, you'll have an easy chair adjacent to it. So there isn't much territory in terms of overall space. You're sharing a bathroom and a window, and often the beds are side by side, which makes it even a bit more difficult because you either own the bathroom or you own the window, one or the other.
You complained about the double-loaded corridors with rooms on each side of the corridor. What's the problem with that?
Well, it doesn't allow natural light to enter the corridor, and it almost always requires an 8-foot extruded corridor system that links to each of the units. One of the first things that you see when you go to Northern Europe is that they have ignored that aspect because they have highly decentralized arrangements. Each one of them is self-contained, and so they can be centered around a single-loaded corridor or toward a larger room which is open to a garden. And the outcome is that you're rarely, if ever, walking down a long corridor with rooms on both sides, like you'd find in a typical hospital environment.
You say in some Northern European countries, the emphasis is on keeping the elderly living at home for as long as possible so that there's service centers that give assistance to people living alone at home so that they can continue to live there but still get the help that they need. What are those service centers like? What do they provide?
They're really extraordinary. Probably the best thing about their system in general is the seamless nature, which is associated with group housing arrangements that are often connected to these service houses, and people who are living in the community and are being provided home care. And so an individual, whether they're in the community or in one of these attached dwelling units, has access to 24-hour care, help, and assistance, both personal care and assistance as well as medical care. And so these settings, which are highly decentralized in almost every urban neighborhood, are open to people who live in the surrounding community, attract individuals for social and therapeutic purposes that live in the surrounding neighborhood, and also provide services to people who are living in their own independent apartments and help to keep them as independent as possible. In fact, they push people back into the community by providing as much help and assistance as possible. And when it's no longer possible for those individuals to either receive the quality of care that's necessary or when they start to feel uncomfortable and would look for and desire or prefer the more supportive aspects associated with a group living arrangement, then they're moved to a setting, service house arrangement that they're familiar with in their own neighborhood. So it's really a bit like a senior center and a housing environment that are co-located. But in addition to those services, they'll have a rehab clinic, a Meals on Wheels program, a restaurant, and often a whole slug of other types of social programs that that appeal to people who are over the age of 70.
So specifically, which countries have you been to in Northern Europe that you were impressed with?
The five that I visited in 1990 and that I just revisited this summer are Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Finland, and the Netherlands. And those countries have had a strong reputation for this particular type of help and assistance and have developed systems over the last couple of decades that are really quite extraordinary, especially in comparison to what has happened here in the United States. You know, in 1965, with the advent of Medicare, we took a fundamentally different approach to this than they did in Northern Europe. We decided to, in a way, medicalize long-term care through the nursing home model. While they looked at the problem and thought about how they could create housing with services. So you find really fundamentally different building types, which are, interestingly enough, catering to exactly the same population.
Tell us more about some of those differences.
Well, some of the best ones in Northern Europe are relatively small. They'll attract 6 to 8 people who are living in a decentralized cluster. And, of course, there'll perhaps be as many as 4 or 5 or 6 of those clusters together that that make up the total building. But essentially, you and 5 to 7 other people are living together in a small group arrangement. You take your meals together. There's a very predictable and familiar staff person or two who's there all of the time, so you don't have to refamiliarize yourself with new people every day or every week. There's an emphasis on privacy. Everybody lives in a single occupied unit. The units that I've seen focus primarily on the living room, the dining room, the kitchen, an activity space, and perhaps an outdoor balcony or garden area. So it's the cluster of those spaces, not unlike what you would experience in your own single-family home, which define the environment itself.
You know, in the United States, a lot of older people dread the day when they will have to go to the nursing home or the assisted living center. It's something that I think is really dreaded, and because of that, a lot of children go through terrible crises in trying to decide whether they should encourage their parent to go to such a place. I'm wondering if it's the same kind of crisis in the Northern European countries that you studied.
Well, I don't think it's quite as much of a jarring change, because instead of moving from a single-family house or apartment into a small double-occupied hospital room, you're moving into an apartment of 500 to 700 square feet, which is essentially self-contained with its own kitchen and its own bedroom. So it's almost like moving to another apartment building if you're living in an apartment. So that change is not a major one. In the United States, perhaps one of the major problems with conventional nursing environments, long-term care as we know it, is the fact that it's not family-friendly. The family members don't feel necessarily that they're invited and that they are an important participant in the caregiving process. And that's something that I think you find handled differently both in assisted living and in these Northern European settings. So the family doesn't feel as disenfranchised. They feel as if they can be a participant. And that, I think, is really, really important.
My guest is architect and gerontologist Victor Rainier. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is architect and gerontologist Victor Rainier. He's been studying Northern Europe's innovative approaches to independent living for the elderly, approaches he thinks we can learn from in providing alternatives to nursing homes. Have you ever been in a position where somebody in your family has had to move into a nursing home or assisted care facility, and you were in on that decision, and it was difficult to
make. Oh, yeah. My father and mother have both been in a nursing home for the last 4 years. My father died in January.
I'm sorry.
And both of them were living in and together in a nursing home in the same room for about 2.5 years. And so I spent a lot of time with them a lot of time with the people that that were providing help and assistance for them. And more often than not, I think they felt as if there was a struggle between the regulatory bodies, which in their mind was the reference group that they needed to impress, and the rest of the family members that were out there trying to trying to develop and maintain a relationship with their parent. It's a very difficult thing to do, and the regulations don't make it any easier. They make it more difficult.
What were the regulations that the staff at your parents' facility complained about most?
I think the idea, for example, one of the things they told us was that we couldn't push the beds together so that they could hold hands with one another at night, because they needed to have access on both sides of the bed, which I thought was a rather absurd requirement, especially one that if the family was willing to waive it, it would be okay to overlook. But to meet the letter of the law, that's exactly what was required, and it became clear to us that we had no choice in the matter, that we either complied or we moved to another building. So sometimes it's simple things like that, just simple quality of life. My parents had been together for 54 years and had never spent time away from one another. And the fact that they were both living in the same room but couldn't be together at night, since they shared the same bed for that 50-year period, was one of those things that we just thought was a real tragedy.
Was it your decision or your parents' decision to go to the nursing home?
Well, my mother has dementia and my father had brain cancer, so both of them were not in a state of mind to make an independent decision, but it was a very difficult one for my brother and my sister and I. In fact, my parents were at home with my sister for about 2 years, 2.5 years before they moved to the nursing home, and it just became much more difficult for us to move my father. He was what they would call a two-person move or lift. So it was impossible for my sister to manage his care by herself, and that's really what precipitated the move to a nursing home. And neither one of them were able to really live independently in an assisted living environment, which would have been my first choice.
From your perspective as an architect, what are some of the things you've seen in the design of facilities that help people with dementia function in the world around them, in the environment around them?
Probably one of the best examples of dementia programming I've also found in Europe, and that is their attitude toward activities of daily living. They really see the older person, again, in these relatively small 6 to 8 person environments, as carrying out normal activities of daily living. So it's not at all uncommon, that is, to find older people who are helping to prepare meals with the assistance of caregivers, or who are setting the table or bussing dishes. They see themselves as participants. Also, for people with dementia, there's a tendency for them to spend more time outside of their unit with other people. So one has to examine the social context a little bit more carefully as well. There needs to be a link and connection between the individual's unit and those group meeting settings where people will come together. And of course, there are lots of interesting and important rules to follow in designing a dementia unit, making certain that people can walk in an unimpaired way, wander, if you will, from one place to another without getting lost, and making certain that access to outdoor gardens are available so that they can walk outside if they care to, or they can participate in gardening activities or whatever. All of these things can be done, and can be done quite well if the environment itself is designed in order to support those types of activities.
I'm sure you've been thinking, like, what would you like when it comes time for you to use some help with your living? Have you thought ahead to changes you'd like to see by then? Yeah.
Yeah, to talk a little bit about what the Europeans have done, they have done some pretty extraordinary things. One of the things that we have a problem with in the United States in continuing care retirement communities, and also just because the occupancy codes are tied often to the competency level of individuals within buildings, we usually move them from one place to another. If you're in a continuing care retirement community, you might make three or four moves before you die. Might move to from independent housing to assisted living to perhaps a nursing home, and then to a dementia unit before you leave. So one of the things that they've been able to do in Europe is overcome some of that propensity to link occupancy with ability. And they have the Dutch, for example, have a model called the Apartments for Life program, where people who are over the age of 55 move into what is essentially an apartment building. About a third of them are 55 to 65, a third of them 75 to 85, and a third of them 85 plus. So that 85 plus population is really a nursing home population, but it's located within what's considered to be a rather conventional apartment environment with nurses on call and the possibility of aging in place, transforming that unit so that it's easy for somebody who's very old and frail, sometimes bedfast or unable to gain ambulation, to live in that unit independently. And for me, of all of the settings that I've seen, it's probably the one that's the most appealing, because it does allow one to create that continuity and to grow older in a conventional apartment unit.
You know, that apartment for life idea, the resistance that I could see happening in the United States is that a lot of people who are, say, in their 60s don't want to be surrounded by people who are much older and much sicker than they are.
Yeah, in that setting, there is a relatively large public space on the first floor, an atrium of sorts, which supports a restaurant and quite a few other facilities, almost like a little mini shopping center. And as part of that is a service center, like the one that we talked about a little bit earlier. Because the units are so large, it's possible for people to spend most of their time in their unit, or that's certainly a place where a lot of activities can be centered, or they meet together with other people that have disabilities that are similar to theirs in small group meeting environments, or in this big atrium and in various sections of the atrium where there are chairs and tables that allow that to occur. And it doesn't seem to be a problem. In fact, in talking with the people who run a building in Rotterdam, it's called the Humanitas Project, they have a huge waiting list and people who are quite interested in moving in at all ages. So you do find that, at least in that culture, they've embraced this notion that one can move into a setting like that, have an autonomous life, and be able to stay there as long as you need to.
Do you think that people in Northern Europe, because they have these, you know, pretty good facilities, are less afraid of growing old than they are in the United States?
That's an excellent question. I'm not really sure. I think growing old is a difficult process for everyone, but I know that there's less uncertainty about what that lifestyle is going to be like. And I think their system, because of its structure, is really centered on consumer concern. So, you know, I guess my quick answer would be probably there is less uncertainty associated with it.
Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Victor Rainier is a professor of architecture and gerontology at the University of Southern California. He'll discuss the Northern European model of independent living for the elderly at the American Institute of Architects convention on Friday. Coming up, TV critic David Bianculli watches Celebrity Week on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. This is Fresh Air.